And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
I'm Larry Larson.
And got a big show packed in.
Yay.
Yeah, Brian Kelly, I think, is in Argentina.
Nice.
Yes. I think for some Visual Studio thing, you know, traveling all over. But, you know, our top story is we got to start off with Soma.
Awesome.
Yes. Visual Studio Team Foundation Server and the Enterprise Cloud. So Satya Nadella had a bunch of announcements in terms of new features for Enterprise Cloud and new things that we're doing around that. Probably one of the coolest numbers from Soma's post is actually Visual Studio has been downloaded 5.5 million times.
Wow.
Visual Studio 2012. The number of people using MSDN Dev and Test, I think, had doubled. And huge numbers in terms of the growth for Team Foundation Server as well.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of great momentum for developers, actually.
Nice.
So very cool. Which brings us to
Visual Studio 2013 virtual launch. So go to events.visualstudio.com and get your save the date set up.
Yes. So November 13th.
Yeah, and we're going to be going live on Channel 9. So we've got kind of a split event. They're going to be having the keynote and some other interviews in New York City.
Okay.
And then they're going to take over to us here in Redmond, where we'll be doing Channel 9 Live from MS Studios. So we're going to head over there.
So that's an opportunity for folks who have questions. Either, you know, there's going to be obviously a bunch of engineers in here mm-hmm. doing live Q&A and a great time to ask questions on Visual Studio or some of the platform technologies as well.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Yay.
Yay.
And that's all you.
It is.
Channel 9 and
Goldlines. Part me. There's lots of other people.
Sure.
Very important people who are
doing. You'd like to thank the Academy. Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Debug Diag 2.0. Now, what's this?
Debug Diag is the long-awaited analysis engine that will allow for faster rule development. Does such things as .NET 4.5 support in this version.
Okay.
C# and XAML sample rules.
Cool.
And detailed first chance exception logging.
Cool. Very cool. It's available now.
Yes.
So you can download it now, which is very cool. Glenn Block has a video. It's about an hour and a half long, around that, called Introducing a Script CS. It's C# on a diet. So the idea is, it's a GitHub project, and using some of the things to basically sort of the REPL programming format, meaning I can just write some code, compile, great for, say, if you're prototyping or you want to play with kind of an API, but you don't want to do file new project, Windows project number 81, and then start doing some, do stuff like, hey, I just want to play with an API, give me a simple way to do that. So. That model and interactive as well, so definitely check it out and watch the video as well.
Great. And next we have AngularJS, the ultimate guide to learning AngularJS in one day. It's a client-side framework built in JS for single-page web apps. You could make an entire website if you like with it.
Yeah. And the idea behind this is following a lot of the same things that we do with our, server-side technology, is building little templates, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I have a template for, you know, the person's username. You know, I do the bracket, and then when it plugs in, it automatically plugs it in. So, it's a pretty cool framework, and this is a huge tutorial.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably, I don't know, 10, 20 pages printed or something crazy. So, cool stuff. Now, this article is actually a two-parter by Mads Christensen where he talks about... Yes.
Love Mads.
He's got some awesome projects.
Mad skills.
He does have mad skills. BlogEngine.net, Web Essentials. This is where he's talking about some of the stuff that he was doing for Page Inspector, some of the Web Essentials tools, and all the kind of different things and how projects sort of got started, whether they were side projects and then he made a pitch action, put them into Visual Studio, or to have them be browser tools as well. So some of the web developer checklists. So if you're a web developer and you want to know, like, hey, here are some of the top things I need to do to make sure my app is supported great on phones, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And as of course, part of that is open sourcing Web Essentials. So at his build talk, he actually, open source Web Essentials 2013, the 1.3 version, live on stage. And now he's actually gone back and open source Web Essentials 2012. so the 12 version as well. Nice. So they're both on GitHub, and they're pretty popular as well. I think at the time of this, it was 110 pull requests from people mm-hmm. that wanted to check it out, and Mads is obviously a kind of a superstar on GitHub as well.
Absolutely. And next we have Visual Studio Team has a blog post on filter breakpoints. So if this is something that you want to learn more about, you definitely want to check out this blog post. Filter breakpoints are a way to tag a line of code or a specific thread. So if you have a bunch of parallel things, you can like hone in on the one that you want to focus on and more easily troubleshoot those.
Yeah, for people that are doing parallel programming, the ability to say, hey, look, I have a bunch of threads. I really want to be able to just hit a breakpoint when it's this thread.
Yeah.
This is my friendly thread. This is the non-working thread. Give it a nice name as well, so you can actually do better in terms of the thread name mm-hmm. versus just memorizing or having to look up some number and stuff. So, but people don't necessarily use this, and they kind of suffer through, you know, trying to figure out what happens and doing trace points and all this other stuff. This is like, no, look, I got a bunch of stuff. I just want to listen to this one.
Yeah.
So very cool and probably underutilized feature.
Mm-hmm.
Troy Hahn has a great article actually on 10 ways to make your .NET projects play nice with others. And this is sort of like the 60 Minutes. Why is it developers, whenever they want to publish something, they don't even try and clean stuff up?
Yeah.
So the classic one is in Visual Studio, when you click build, it actually has your bin, debug, release, and it includes all these files, and they're all exact duplicates of each other, and people would just check it in, right? So your source code goes from 45K to 2 megs, and you start multiplying that over time, and then you like literally download the code from somebody else, and it's all stuff you don't need, whether it's the Visual Studio Solution project and some of the other stuff. So it's just sort of, I would think, common things, or people comment out code, and they're like, wait, which one am I supposed to use, and, mm-hmm. and why is this commented out? Like, just clean your stuff. Before you share, clean it up.
Yeah.
Before you share, clean it up. And these are sort of the 10 rules that I think everybody should follow for cleaning up.
And next we have Kevin Lacker from Parse, and he has a great article on designing great APIs. And how do you design great APIs? You use the trait that programmers lean into most. Laziness.
Yeah. I love it.
Another way of putting this is make your API easy. And so he's got a couple of rules here. The first one is it should be intuitive, obviously.
Absolutely.
Because if it's intuitive, you're not looking at the documentation. You're just typing what you think it should be, and that is a great tip.
And if you have to look at that sample, like, wow, does it make sense what we're making that people do? Is there a bunch of ceremony? Like, do I have to call 10 lines of code, or is it one to do, like, the most common things?
Yeah. And then the second tip is it should have great documentation. So if something isn't so intuitive that you just know how to do it, then you have good documentation to back that up.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
And then
much.
The final one is the API needs to be opinionated, which another way of saying this is keep consistent. So if you use underscores and names, then keep using underscores and names.
Right, right.
Or if you don't use them, just keep it consistent.
Yeah, consistency is one of those things that also just, it can be annoying.
Well,
it's
kind of like the opposite. Another part of being intuitive, because if it's not consistent, then it's not intuitive.
And I think one of the problems that happens with that consistency is you have three people, right? So you tend to like the dark and stormy night novels.
Yeah.
and I'm more of a vampire fiction guy. So when we combine our work, you know, that just becomes a terrible mix. But you want it to seem when somebody reads the story that it's one view.
Yeah.
Our code should look and behave similarly and consistently.
Of course.
Which brings us to Picks of the Week!
Nice. Pick of the Week time.
So this is super cool. It's a project management board built with Lego. So the idea is every month is a chunk of Lego, and every day has a break, and you basically have two Legos that you can put representing your half day of work, and you put your Lego guy on them, like kind of what you're doing now. They've even built software using, say, OCR and color recognition to say, hey, let me now take a very physical thing and actually build a digital dashboard based on it. And they're going to release the source code for that.
Yeah, so it's doing optical recognition to look at this calendar, figure out which color is which person, and then plot it on an actual calendar.
Yeah, this is very cool, and I think having something so physical and where people want to be like, hey, here's what I'm working on.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes people want to work it. And the one thing it needs is, of course, like you were mentioning, the ability to, if you add something digitally, it needs to add it back to the Lego.
Yeah, so if I go on the calendar at home and I add an event, then the Lego calendar is out of date.
Which is why we need a Lego machine to actually add Legos onto there. So you specify the
Clint
dates.
Clint will have that done by late afternoon, I'm
Clint's
sure.
Clint's going to be pulling an all-nighter.
Yeah.
So too bad for him.
Yeah, very cool project, though.
Cool. And what's your pick of the week?
Mine is my Oculus Rift. So I got my Rift recently.
You
want
to put this on? No,
I'll let you do it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can look at my screen like...
Fantastic.
Half a screen in each eye.
This is
it's
great.
Not set up, yeah.
This is great. Okay.
But got the Rift, so been playing around with it. It hooks into Unity, and you can use the Unity development kit to create some 3D games or whatever it is that you want to make. I think I'm going to make my first project in Unity is going to be doing the national monuments. So that when it's shut down, you can still go see all the national monuments.
So you can go walk around?
Now,
do you get like a bazooka or anything?
Yeah,
or?
Thumb your nose at the federal government. And
okay.
You're not allowed to mention federal government and bazooka in the same sentence, so I'm sure you'll enjoy the visit later.
Oh, good.
Today.
NSA is watching. Great.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's very cool. I've played probably about 10 games with it, or 10 demos and games, and it's very cool. It's the kind of thing where if you've done VR before, if you've had VR
right.
before, nothing new here other than, it's got better resolution than previous ones, and it's a lot cheaper. I mean,
and
it's
head tracking too, though, right?
Head tracking is great, but, I mean, we had head tracking with, like, the VFX 1
okay.
and some other virtual reality headsets. But if you've never done VR before, you'll put it on and be amazed. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for the cost, it's incredible. I mean, these things used to be just a fortune back in the day, and now they're very accessible and affordable. This is the development kit, so it's 720p. When the consumer device comes out, it's going to be 1080, of course, and will look a little bit better. It has kind of a screen door effect when you're looking at it now.
Right.
But as far as for games, I built this new gaming rig at home, so I've got three 1080 displays and an Eyefinity set up. Can you mm-hmm. take that off? Because it's so difficult to stare at the black screen and talk. So
I wanted to see how long
I'm speaking with my hands to you looking at a screen. So I built this gaming rig that has three screens, and it allows me to turn my head and look around when I'm like flying Battlefield 4 helicopters, which is incredible. So this is pretty good, but I think I still like the traditional, just widescreen display for gaming.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't play this for like hours at a time, but it's very, very interesting. It's going to be really cool to play around with Unity and make some demos for it.
Awesome. Very cool stuff. Cool. And I definitely had fun playing with it, too.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I think it depends on the app.
Yeah.
Right? So for games, I'd probably want to play with it because I wouldn't know exactly where... You probably have to get used
yeah.
to the, hey, I'm moving double X axis control, like classic Xbox control.
Yeah.
And then when do I look around and how does that actually
yeah,
work?
Yeah, some things are better than others. I mean, Flight Sim,
Skyrim
of
would
course.
Be fun, I would
yeah.
think.
Yeah, Minecraft is pretty incredible.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because, I mean, the spaces are so big. I mean, you really get the depth,
right,
the feel
right.
of how deep it is. So, yeah, that's pretty good. As far as, like, first-person shooters, I'll try it, but I think I'll probably stick with my gaming rig for those.
Yeah, very cool. All right, well, thank you, Larry, for joining us, and we will see you all next time.